people thinking about baseball. Of course, spring training going on right now. High hopes for everybody as they kind of get out there.
Everyone's undefeated, right?
Right, and the players are hoping they'll be the one that their year will turn around. Who knows what happened on the offseason? Well, a guy who's been there and knows a lot about that is Dirk Hayhurst, who joins us. Author, baseball player, broadcaster now with Toronto as well, but resides sometimes as well in Hudson, Ohio. He joins us with another book called Bigger Than the Game. First one was Bullpen Gospel. And it's interesting, Dirk. I'm looking at this. The book we're talking about now, Bigger Than the Game, it includes the point at which your first book came out. So you're kind of like now in a book about the time when your other book was coming out. When you were doing that, were you thinking, boy, there's a story here to tell while that was going on?
No, I wasn't, actually. When I started writing these, I was just hoping I would keep my job, quite honestly.
That would be the baseball.
For there to be three of them.
Yeah, that's going on here. I've been reading this book, and I'm kind of up to the point where you're sort of coming to the realization that you've got this injury. But take us back, I guess, to the beginning of this book where you're kind of – everything is high. There's high hopes. There's a lot of good things. And you're thinking, I just got to get better, got to work out, make myself stronger. And then what happens?
Well, sure. So I spent most of my career as a garden variety right-handed reliever. Not a lot of upside for me. So when I finally did make it to the major leagues after 6 years of toiling in the minors, I didn't want to waste that opportunity. So in the off season, I hired this monster trainer guy. I mean, he's a power lifter crossed with a cyborg, crossed with an action hero movie. And his job is just to beat the snot out of me so I can be the best baseball player I can be. And he does, but it's not enough, frankly, and I wanted more. So I go back into the gym one night after this incredibly hard workout. I'd done more than enough, but I decide I want to do some bench press too on top of it. And really the big motivation for this was that if I could just come into camp in perfect shape, I might have a chance to stick on the Toronto Blue Jays roster. So I go in, I do my bench press. On like the third press, I blow my shoulder out. And all these dreams of sticking in the majors and everything that was going to come with it, just in one single bench press, gone. And it was the most crushing experience. But it wasn't just that. It was everything that happens there on after. What athletes, when they usually say that injury is the hardest thing they've ever had to deal with, 100% fact. Most difficult thing you'll ever go through as an athlete. And the reason is not because athletes aren't tough and they can't take the pain. It's that they've never had to deal with that kind of psychological duress before, where the what they've always got their adulation from, their identity from, their health, essentially, is stripped from them. They're isolated. There's no one for them to really talk to because no one cares if you're hurt or you're broken. They only care that you're not helping the team. And if you feel sad about it, boo-hoo, millionaire, cry me a river. Come work my job. I'll give you something to feel sad about. So it opens up this new world that is not talked about, often leads to a lot of addiction and depression for athletes. And this book was very important to me because it explored not just what happens to a fringe prospect when they get injured, but what happens behind the scenes in baseball as far as addiction and psychological and mental illness and how rampant it actually is in pro sports.
One thing that I was reading along, I'm thinking you got injured. You think, okay, well, you'll go to a doctor. You'll get it checked out. You'll find it. And then you have this whole scenario you tell about how players like to either self-medicate or do it on the sly because there's a paper trail that follows them throughout their career that I never even thought about.
That's right. Well, think about it this way. I mean, your key asset as an athlete is your health. And if you have a record that says your health is questionable, that affects your earnings potential. And that's not such a bad thing if you're a super prospect or a superstar player. But if you are a fringe guy, that's life or death for you. So a lot of players, what they'll do is if they get called up to the major leagues for only a short period of time, they won't go into the training room even if they have something seriously wrong with them because the last thing they want the organization to think is that these guys are of questionable health and can't survive, which means they'll get sent back to the minors. And the difference between the medical assistants and the majors and minors is night and day. In the minors, they can give you a bag of pills and say, this is your surgery in a bag. You either take it or you're released. And in the majors, you have the union behind you, and so they have to fix you. So they'll send you to the doctor immediately. And within a half hour of you getting hurt, you'll be in an MRI machine. But in the minors, you might spend 6 or 7 months just using medication while your career slips out of your grasp permanently.
Dirk, I don't imagine there are a lot of ball players in the locker room thinking, you know, I'm going to write a book about this. What was it that sort of spurred you on?
Well, I think that it's the way I've always looked at baseball. It's kind of peculiar. I've always thought that baseball was bigger than the game, no pun intended for the title. But the reason I say that is because, to me, sports is a platform. And it's a platform that people get on and they can reach a lot of individuals throughout the world through this accepted platform of sports and play. And we tend to hold athletes in a higher value and esteem than maybe we should as a people. And I thought, you know, I'm never going to be in the majors for a long time. I'm just not that talented. But I like to write. I want to tell these stories. I want people to see what baseball is really like behind the scenes. Essentially, I want to be known for something. I want to give something back through this opportunity. And so I started writing these books as much to explore and sort out a lot of the cliches and misnomers that surround pro sports, but also to reach people, to make an impact. I was never going to be an all-star, but I could put a few sentences together. So I wanted to tell these stories because I felt like they needed to be told, and I had the opportunity to do it. And if I left the game without doing it, then I really would have wasted my career.
The book is called Bigger Than the Game, Restitching a Major League Life. Dirk Hayhurst is our guest this morning. Who else did you meet along the way besides that trainer who I like that guy? I could just picture him the way you described him. He just probably – he seemed to have your best interest at heart somewhat, but
– Surgery in a bag or whatever. Yeah.
But
yeah, well, when he wasn't abusing me, yeah, he definitely had my best interest. I met Triple H in this book, the professional wrestler. Dr. James Andrews is in this book. Roy Halladay is in this book. Over the course of my writing career, I've ran into guys like Trevor Hoffman and, you know, some of the great Greg Maddux and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of big names that come in, but most of the names in this book are protected because I didn't want this to become a full-out expose, but I did want it to have some solid anchors into reality. So you'll know some of the names and the rest you kind of have to do your homework. But if you're a baseball fan worth your salt, you'll figure out who the names are.
Dirk, very few people actually make it to the big leagues. What was it like for you the very first time?
Horrifying. Absolutely terrifying. I remember going out to play catch before I'd start my first major league game as the starting pitcher. And I forgot how to play catch. This is not a joke. I was literally standing in the outfield trying to play catch with the catcher, and I threw half of a ball bag into the stands because I couldn't hit him in the chest from 40 feet away. It was the most embarrassing thing I've ever experienced. I thought I was going to wet my pants, vomit, or both. I'm just happy I survived it.
That's like those people that have a chance to throw out the first pitch. It's not much different for a major leaguer when they get an opportunity, I guess.
Well, you know, you've thought about this your entire life. I mean, it's the big dream of your existence for how many years to get to that point. And finally, you're there, and you can't stop thinking it. It's like traveling at warp speed, you know, and you're nauseous and you're scared and you realize that this isn't practice more like the minors. I mean, this is the real thing. And if I screw up, this will be on every television station throughout the entire country, and I'll be either known as the guy who threw up and vomited or wet his pants, or I'll be the guy who survived the first inning. What's it going to be? And you think about that every pitch until finally that familiar rhythm sets in and you can survive.
So what happened in your first start?
Oh, boy. I've had a lot of psychological counseling to try and black this experience out, but sure, I'll relive it for you. So in my first start, I faced the San Francisco Giants in San Francisco, and I barely survived four innings. Barely, just barely. And I was so thrilled that I made it four innings that afterwards I could have walked home on a cloud. It was amazing afterwards, but during it was absolutely harrowing and terrifying. And like I said, I'm just happy that I lived through the experience. I do remember distinctly walking. Barry Zito was the opposing pitcher. He walked me, because in the National League you have to hit for yourself, and I forgot where first base was. That's absolutely 100% honest. I could not remember what to do. I remember the umpire saying to me, first base is down there, son. And he pointed to it because I didn't know what – I'd never been on base before. I'd always struck out in the minors. So, yeah, that was kind of embarrassing. Wow. So there's that.
That's what, sounds like those. That seems like a nightmare that you would have. You'd wake up and think, I can't find first base. Who took first base? And why are there four bases or five bases? You know, that kind of a thing. How has it been being a broadcaster, you know, doing the play color for the Toronto Blue Jays? Different kind of butterflies, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a little scary, but it's a lot easier than, I'd say, you know, being out there on the mound in front of everybody and then living or dying on a pitch. But I'm surprised at how fast, once you leave the game as a player and you come back to it as a broadcaster, the players have just, they don't want anything to do with you, man, because they're so terrified of you. They're afraid of what you're going to say about them. They're always weary. It's peculiar how it works in baseball, especially. There's this stigma that anybody who comes into the locker room with a recorder or a pen or their job to talk about you as a player, very rarely are those guys liked. So I went from being a member of the Toronto Blue Jays just 2 years previous, playing with some of those guys on the team, to suddenly it being my job to talk about them and their games and analyze their play. So I went from friend to enemy in record time.
Well, I talked with John Feinstein, who's written a book about some minor league players where nobody knows your name. It's a new book he has out. And one thing he says, it's a whole different experience if you're wearing a uniform in a locker room and if you're not wearing a uniform.
Oh, it's true. It's true. It's a very elite club. And once you're out of that club, you're so far gone. It's instantaneous, an uncrossable chasm. I remember walking up to one of the Major League Union reps at spring training for the Blue Jays and saying, so I was with you guys for 2 years. I know it wasn't a long time, but what's our relationship now? Can I rely on you to help me get jobs anywhere or do speaking events? And their reaction was immediate. And this was just the union representatives, not even the team. They said, you don't give us any more money, so really we don't have anything to do with you. Sorry. And it's the same thing with the team. It's, you don't help us win anymore, so you're dead to us.
Wow. And I know that's somewhat reflected a little bit in your book as well. It's called Bigger Than the Game, Restitching a Major League Life. I need to know, when was the first time you ever saw what was really inside a baseball? It looks so smooth and classy on the outside. Inside, it's a total mess, in my opinion.
Oh, yes. It's wound twine over cork, over rubber. I think the first time I ever saw what was inside of it is when I think Manny Ramirez hit a ball out of its cover off of me when I was in the majors. But, yeah, I've given up a lot of baseballs that have been destroyed by opposing hitters. So I've had the opportunity to see the inside of a baseball more than I'd like to.
Wow. You made a comment before. You said that the baseball players fear you more. It's finally a point where you as a pitcher now are being feared, but it's only because you're a broadcaster, not because they're out facing them on the mound.
That's of no consolation, but thank you.
All right. The book is called Bigger Than the Game. Our guest today has been Dirk Hayhurst. Dirk, thanks for sharing the time and the stories with us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.